the Reb Chaim Volozhiner says that the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu are very relevant to all of us, because those 10 tests created a reservoir of power and energy for all future generations. And any Jew that is ever in similar situations as Avraham Avinu gets the power from those 10 tests to persevere and overcome those situations or function in those situations. For instance, no Jew could have ever sacrificed his life or the life of his family al Kiddush Hashem if it hadn't been that Avraham Avinu passed the test of the Akeda. And similarly, no Jew could have ever left familiar surroundings, family, friends, and come to Eretz Yisrael had Avraham Avinu not passed the test of Lech Lecha. So therefore, I think, since I guess all of us have passed that test and have taken from the energy that Avraham Avinu created by fulfilling the test of Lech Lecha, it would be a good idea for us to understand what that test was and what reservoir of strength we have to call upon in making our own personal aliyah. I always tell people, aliyah to Eretz Yisrael does not end at Ben Gurion Airport. It begins there. In fact, the Medrash says there are two lech lechas in the Torah. Lech lecha me'artzecha and lech lecha el Eretz HaMoriah. And I don't know which one's greater. Since this one says el Eretz HaMoriah, that's the greater one. Meaning that there's a lech lecha negative, get away from Chutz La'aretz, lech lecha me'artzecha, that's one level. And then once you're here, there's an idea of elevating yourself constantly. That's even a greater level. So in order to be able to fulfill that constant and consistent aliyah, it's a good idea to know what Avraham Avinu, what test did he pass. So Torah says that the Rabban Shem told Avraham Avinu, lech lecha me'artzecha. And Rashi says, what's lech lecha? Lech lecha means letovascha ulaha'anoscha, for your good and your pleasure. I always explain that that means that there are many things in this world that are good for you, but they're not pleasurable. You know, not enjoyable. I knew when my mother, Olei HaShalom, said, eat your vegetables, they're good for you, that they weren't tasty. Because if they would be, she would have to convince me they're good for me. And there are a lot of things in this world that are very enjoyable that aren't good for you. Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Avraham Avinu, is good and pleasurable. So what's the test? If God told me, I knew that God was speaking to me, and he promised me that if I went to Timbuktu, it would be good and pleasurable, why shouldn't I go? Well, it's a test. We're not talking about a shliach aliyah telling you it's going to be good and pleasurable. We're talking about the Rabban Shem telling you. So what's the test? Well, the answer is, I saw that Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky says this, others say it also very clearly, that Avraham Avinu was commanded not merely to make a geographic change in position, to physically leave Haran and to go to Eretz Yisrael. But part of the mitzvah of Lech Lecha was to change his whole, not whole, but change his viewpoint, his hashkafos, his outlooks on the world, his standards, his values, to fit what Eretz Yisrael represents. It was not just a physical change of place, it was an entire change of attitude. And that was part of the test, we'll see in a second. And therefore, if this is the case, that Avraham, and that's why it says, lech lecha me'artzecha, mimoladetecha, mibeis avicha. It's the opposite of the physical leaving. First you leave your father's home, then you leave your birthplace, then you leave the greater country. But if we're talking about leaving ideologically, we're talking about leaving in mindset, then, Taka, the order is right. First you leave the more general things, right, ideas of the country, then the ideas of your birthplace, then the ideas of your father's home. So then it's in the right order. It also explains the following. Torah says, after Lech Lecha, Vayelech Avram kasher dibir ito Elohim, Vayelech ito Lot. Avram went like God told him, and Lot went with him. Next pasuk says, Avram ben 75 betzeisom mechoran. Avram was 75 when he left Choran. That's one pasuk. Next pasuk. Vayikach Avram es Sarai ishto v'es Lot ben Achiv v'es hanefesh asher asu b'choron v'es kol rechusham asher achashu v'yetzu l'leches eretz Kenan v'yavo eretz Kenan. Then Avram takes his wife Sarai and Lot and all the people that he converted and all of his possessions, and he goes to Eretz Kenan. He went already once. What was the first sentence? First sentence says, Vayelech Avram, Avram went and Lot went with him. Next pasuk says, Avram took his wife Sarai and Lot and everybody else and they went. Why did he have to say it twice? And it's impossible to say what happened was, Avram sets out with Lot, they're in the middle of the road and they say, you know, we forgot something. Can't put my finger on it, lock the door, close the windows. And he hears it, Sarah! They run back, Vayikach Avram es Sarai ishto, he goes back, takes his wife. Obviously that's not what happened. So what did happen? Whenever the Torah says Vayikach by a human being, it doesn't mean to take physically. It means to convince. Vayikach Hashem Elokim es Ha'adam, Rashi says, he took him with words. Because you can't take a human being by his hand, because that's only his body. You have to convince him, you have to take his neshama too. So whenever you take a human being, it means with words. That's why it says kaches Aaron, kachenu b'dvorim, kaches halevim, throughout the Torah. Whenever it says kach, take a human being, it means with words. What happened was like this. Avram gets the command to go with Lot, to go to Eretz Kenan. So he goes with his whole family. Doesn't have to say that Sarah went, because Avram and Sarah are one. It's if it says Vayelech Avram, it means Sarai. It also means his students, because a person and his students is like a father and a child. So take your children. It also does not have to say he took his possessions. Obviously he took his possessions. What is the only thing that's not included in Avram? Lot. So it says Vayelech Avram, Vayelech ito Lot. Avram, including everything, went and Lot. Okay, now he's on the road. Vayikach Avram es Sarai ishto. He calls all his family together and he says, look, God doesn't only want us to make a physical change over here. He wants us to change our mindset, our world view. So Vayikach Avram, now he has to convince them, right, and explain to them what Eretz Yisrael is different than where they were. That's what it means, Vayikach Avram. Okay. What is this change? This change that Avraham Avinu has to do to adapt to an Eretz Yisrael philosophy as opposed to a Chutz La'aretz philosophy. Okay? And if he doesn't, that's the test. Because if you don't change your outlook and your standards and your values, then you're not going to find Eretz Yisrael to be a good and pleasurable place. And let me go a little bit into detail in that, even though we've spoken about this in the past, but just very quickly. Torah says that Eretz Yisrael is not like Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, you always had water that the Nile overflowed. There was always ready irrigation. But in Eretz Yisrael, unless it rains, you don't have water for drinking. You don't have water for irrigation. Limtara shomayim tishtemayim. You can only have water to drink from rainfall. So on the surface, it seems that God's trying to discourage us from going to Eretz Yisrael. No, Eretz Yisrael is not like Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, you always had ready supply of water, and in Eretz Yisrael, everything depends on rainfall. If I heard that, I think I'd turn back and go back to Egypt. What's God trying to do? The answer, we always say, is expressed in the following. The snake, the original snake, was cursed with many curses. One of the curses was that it would eat dust. The rabbis say that doesn't mean that snakes eat dust, because dust is not nutritious. Some say it means that whatever he eats tastes like dust. That's a curse. But others say it means that wherever the snake will be, its food supply will be available to it like the dust. Now that doesn't seem like a curse. I wouldn't mind such a curse. Wherever you are, you have a readily available food supply. The Jewish people in the Midbar had one day's food supply at a time. If they tried to save the food for the next the month, for the next day, it rotted. So the Jews got a big blessing of one day's food supply, and the Nachash gets his big curse that his food supply is always readily available. Never understood this until the following Maisa happened in Miami. A woman that was part of my kehillah, who now lives in Beit Shemesh, was a teacher in the public high school. She taught Hebrew. At that time, Hebrew was an accepted second language in Miami. Now the accepted second language in Miami is English. Spanish is the first language. In any case, but then Hebrew was an accepted second language in high school, and she taught Hebrew, and obviously most of her students were Jews. So she called me one day. She said she has a 17-year-old student who's tried to commit suicide unsuccessfully twice, and nobody can try to convince him not to try again. And she said, you know, would I mind trying to save this kid's life and speaking to him? So she brought this boy to me, and he looked like the saddest human being I ever saw in my life. So I said to him, you're 17 years old. What could have happened in your short life that you could be so sad, so depressed, that you want to kill yourself? He said, I'll tell you. He said, my mother abandoned me and my father when I was an infant. So I never knew my mother. My father raised me. My father's a very wealthy man. My father raised me all these years. And my father met a woman that he wants to marry. But obviously the woman made a condition that she won't marry my father unless I'm out of the picture. So a few weeks ago my father called me in, and he took out from his pocket a set of keys and told me that he bought me a very plush condominium in a very nice yuppie neighborhood in Miami, and it's fully furnished and it's mine, fully paid for. And he gave me the keys to the condominium. Then he took out another set of keys and he said, these are keys to a sports car that he bought for me that's fully paid for. I need transportation. Here's my own car. And then he took out a credit card on his name and he said, if I need clothing, entertainment, whatever, right, within reason, I should put it on the credit card and my father will pay the bill. But he said one thing, please don't call me, don't come to visit me. It's been nice knowing you. This is the end of our relationship. Have a good life. He shook my hand. That was the end. Now, I was much younger then, and I said to myself, if I had a sports car, a condominium, and free credit, and I was 17 years old, I don't think I'd be suicidal. I think I'd be rather happy. So I felt telling this kid, look, we all have our package of tzaras in this world. I have mine, you have yours. Let's trade. You give me your sports car, your condominium, and your credit card. I'll give you my tzaras, right? So then I realized that every time that kid used the sports car, lived in the condominium, and used the credit card, it reminded him that nobody wanted him. That he was totally rejected, totally unloved. That is a curse. That's the curse of the snake. By the way, so you don't think about this the rest of the shiur, in the end, I found that the boy was not Jewish. He was adopted. He was a Catholic. I called the Catholic social services, told them the story, and they found him a foster home, very fine foster home. So I checked on him before I left Miami, and he was very happy in this foster home, still had his condominium, car, and credit card. He had the best of both worlds. This kid didn't try to commit suicide anymore. It was okay. In any case, but that was the curse of the Nachash. God said, there have to be snakes in the world. I want to have nothing to do with you. Here's your food supply till the end of time. Don't have anything to do with me. Jewish people, God wanted to see them every day. They should know that they have a Father in heaven who cares for them, who provides for them. That's a blessing. You have less food, but that's a blessing. That's Eretz Yisrael. Mitzrayim, God put on a Shabbos clock. The Nile overflows by cycle, and they have their water. But Eretz Yisrael, the Rabban Shem deals with directly. You may not have as much water. You may have drought sometime. But you know that you have a relationship with the Rabban Shem. So it depends what your mindset is. If you're looking for a relationship with God, Eretz Yisrael is a place that you'll enjoy, and it'll be good for you. If you're looking for a lot of water, then maybe Eretz Yisrael is not such a good place. You're not going to enjoy it, and it's not going to be good for you. So part of the test was, would Avram Avinu be able not only to leave Chutz La'aretz physically, but to leave the concept that Chutz La'aretz represented and adopt the concepts that Eretz Yisrael represents? Now let's see what they are. First, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. So simple meaning is, leave your general country. But Artzecha means leave your physical, material focus on life. Don't focus on the material, physical side of life, because that's what Chutz La'aretz is all about. And the Medrash says that refers, Artzecha refers to Charan. Charan is Aram Narayim. The Medrash says the following. The Medrash says that Avram Avinu, before Lech Lecha, 5 years before Lech Lecha, Avram Avinu took a pilot trip, a world tour, to find a place to live that he was hoping one day he'll have children, and he was looking around the world for a nice place to settle. So he came to Aram Narayim, that's Haran, and he saw the goyim of the place, the idol worshippers, eating, drinking, partying, and he said, God, please, this is not the place I want to raise my children. Don't give me this land. Then he came to Eretz Yisrael, to Eretz Canaan, again, on a pilot trip, on his own. And he saw that the idol worshippers were plowing and planting and harvesting, and he said, God, this is the place. If you're going to give me a place, this is the place I want to raise my children. The obvious question is, what in the difference is there between a bunch of idol worshippers eating, drinking, and partying, and a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting? Right? If the goal of Judaism would be farming, agriculture, right, then I understand that. It's great for the JNF. But that's what Jews are supposed to be, farmers. And therefore, Avraham Avinu saw a bunch of idol worshippers who were farmers. That's it. And a bunch of idol worshippers who were partygoers, not for me. The idea we've mentioned in the past, without going into great detail, there's two philosophies of life. There's a philosophy of eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, meaning this world for the sake of this world. And then there's a philosophy that this world is a means to reach an end. You put in the effort here for a future benefit. The future benefit is the world to come. Avraham Avinu saw that Chutz La'aretz, specifically Aram Narayim, Haran, is conducive to that first philosophy, party, eat, drink, and be merry. And therefore, it's not conducive to a Torah lifestyle. You could make a Torah community, you could live Torah in Chutz La'aretz, but you have to go against the environmental influence. Many people do. But the environment is eat, drink, and be merry. He saw, though, that in Eretz Yisrael is just the opposite. There, the environment, even the goyim, even the idol worshippers, their philosophy was plant, plow, put in work now for the future. Their future was to get their fruit. But it wasn't immediate gratification. It was what's for the future. So my children will grow up in such an atmosphere which is conducive to a future benefit. Put in the work now for a future benefit. So that is what Avraham Avinu saw. Just as a highlight, I remember once I was in Eretz Yisrael and they had Shavua HaSefer. It used to be different than it is today. It used to be just a week, and they brought the books, all the publishers brought their latest books to a common place in the city, and Yerushalayim was in Garap Hamon. And it was a night out. Everybody would come, look around for books, buy books, look at books. They had cotton candy for the kids. It was not much a night out with the family. So I remember taking my children and my wife to Garap Hamon, and we spent the evening walking around, looking at Sfarim, at books, and kids had a good time. And then I went home, and I had to leave to Chutz La'aretz that night on a 1 o'clock flight. So I came home and I went to the airport. I come into next morning into New York. The person who meets me at the plane says, you know, there's something going on special in Javits Convention Center. Maybe you'd like to go. I have tickets. Maybe you'd like to go. So what's going on? He said, kosher food fair. What is that? All the producers of kosher food bring their latest products to Javits Convention Hall, put it out on tables, and people walk around looking at this food, tasting it, whatever, to see what's new in kosher food. I said to myself, look at the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. I just came from a bunch of people walking around tables, looking at books, perusing books and svarim. And in America, they're walking around tables looking at food. Now, nothing against kosher foods. Nothing wrong with kosher food, but that's the focus. I saw that they had a 24-hour hotline for kashrus in a certain community. You could call the number any time, day or night, and find out if this hefser is reliable or not. It bothered me. I can understand, you know, if you had a call because somebody is on a resuscitating machine or a lung, you have to know if you have to unplug them or not. You have to call 24 hours a day. But I wake up 4 o'clock in the morning, and I have this new thing that I don't know if the hefser is 100% okay. I've got to call now and know because I can't wait till 7 o'clock in the morning and call my rabbi. It's absurd. So if that becomes the whole focus of life, something's wrong. But that's chutz la'aretz. Eat, drink, and be merry. Kosher. It doesn't make a difference. That's the focus. Again, you could live a beautiful Torah life in chutz la'aretz, but you have to fight against the environment. The environment, the influence is eat, drink, and be merry. Here in Eretz Yisrael, even the non-religious, the original chalutzim, they came here. They drained the swamps. They prepared, not for them. They knew they wouldn't enjoy it. It was for future generations. The environmental influence here is for putting work now for the future. So in any case, that's lech lecha me'artzecha. Avram Avinu, you're going to have to go away from a focus on the material, physical world and focus on the spiritual world. And that, another medrash says, this lech lecha me'artzecha hints to Shibud Mitzrayim. That's what Mitzrayim was. Mitzrayim was a place where they focused only on the physical world. They didn't see anything spiritual. They believed that the physical world could be manipulated with magic or whatever, and they put the Jews to work, the Chomer Ulevilvenim, with materialism. That was Shibud Mitzrayim. So, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha counteracts the Golus Mitzrayim, and it refers to Aram Narayim, to Choron, where I told you the Medrash says that the environment influence a person to eat, drink, and be merry. Then comes the second thing. So the first thing, and Eretz Yisrael is a land that is conducive to a more spiritual look at life. Then there's Moladetecha, the place you were born. That has to do with the mazalos. A person is born, he has a certain mazal. That's Meluch Lech Bavodazar, the Medrash says. Your birthplace, and it refers specifically to Ur Kasdim. Ur Kasdim is where they threw Avram into the furnace because Nimrod said he's God. And Avram preached that there's a God, a one God. And Nimrod believed in idolatry. And he believed that he was the God. So, Moladetecha is separate yourself from this idea of intermediaries between you and God. You have a direct relationship with God. In Chutz La'aretz, everything goes through intermediaries. Every nation has its archangel, every country has its archangel, and everything goes through those angels. In Eretz Yisrael, the Ribbono Shel Olam deals directly with the people in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the next thing is, forget about Avodah Zarah, forget about this concept of intermediaries between God and man. Eretz Yisrael, you have a direct relationship with God. And that corresponds to Golus Bavel. What was the beginning of Golus Bavel, where they suffered the whole miracle of Purim? The Pesel of Nebuchadnezzar. The Avodah Zarah they had to bow down to that Nebuchadnezzar set up. That's Golus Bavel. And so that is Mimoladetecha. Now it's interesting. Okay, well, Moladetecha. Okay, next comes Beis Avicha. Beis Avicha is go away from foreign influences. Your father's house is the worst, closest influence if it's negative. And that refers to Aver Hanar, Avraham Avinu leaving the place where his father started out. The Aver Hanar, Yoshua Vosecha Meolam, Terecha V'Avraham, V'Avinochar, V'Yavdu Elohim Achirim. Where did your forefather start out? It says in the Haggadah, it's from Yoshua. The Aver Hanar. So leave your father's home, that's called Aver Hanar. And that is all the bad influences of the Goyim. And Terach was a bad influence. Both bad influences when they want to make us befriend us and when they want to harm us. Both of them are bad. One is a bad physical influence, one's a bad spiritual influence. And Terach had both. Terach was a bad spiritual influence on his son. He had an idol store and he forced his son to worship the idols and sell the idols. And then when Avram Avinu didn't toe the line, he informed on him to Nimrod, like they used to do in the KGB, have parents, children inform on each other, and his own father got him arrested and thrown into the fiery furnace. So Terach represents all the bad influences that a Jew has to survive in Golis. We live amongst the Goyim, we're influenced by them. Sometimes physically harmful, sometimes spiritually harmful. That's an Eretz Yisrael, we're Goy Echad Ba'aretz. We live in Eretz Yisrael without Goyim, right? Talking about today, but in the time when in Eretz Yisrael, Goyim won't be allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael unless they accept the seven mitzvahs of Noah. So they're not a bad influence. Then they can live in Eretz Yisrael, except in Yerushalayim. Can't live in Yerushalayim. They can live in Netanya. Can't live in Yerushalayim. But you can have Goyim in Eretz Yisrael, but only Goyim that are righteous Goyim, that keep their seven mitzvahs. So we won't have those bad influences. That's another mila of what's it called of Eretz Yisrael. So those are the things that Avraham Avinu had to leave the negatives. May Arzecha, leave your mindset of focusing on physical material things. Mimoladetecha, leave this concept of intermediaries, indirect relationship with God, and leave the bad influences of Chutz La'aretz, of living amongst the Goyim that are a bad influence physically and spiritually. And if you do that, if you're able to separate yourself intellectually, ideologically, attitude-wise, from all these negative things, then you will acquire, says the Marsha, different spiritual powers that will enable you to use Eretz Yisrael properly and to benefit from it properly and enjoy it properly. What is that? You'll end up coming to Aretz Asher Areka. And there it says, Aretz Asher Areka means the ultimate of Eretz Yisrael's Har Moriah, the Beis HaMikdash. Because the Beis HaMikdash has in it all these positive things. One is that the Beis HaMikdash is a place where it is spiritual. It's the ultimate spirituality in the world. So it counteracts that materialism focus. Then the Beis HaMikdash is the place where God deals directly. His presence is there directly. It counteracts the intermediaries. And the Beis HaMikdash is no Goyim. No Goyim come to the Beis HaMikdash. Goyim can't go past the Chil. They're separated. The Beis HaMikdash is only Jews. So we don't have their influence either. So the Beis HaMikdash represents the ultimate of the opposite of what Chutz La'aretz represented. And then the Esch of the Goy Gadol, connected the three things, the Zohar says. If you leave Arzecha, the Esch of the Goy Gadol. You leave Moladetecha, the Avarechecha. You leave Beis Avicha, the Agadlo Shemecha. What does that mean? First thing, Esch of the Goy Gadol. The Gemara says that's what we say in Shmone Esrei, Elokei Avraham. Okay? This is the idea of chesed. What's chesed? Chesed is doing kindnesses. The Maral says that a person who's a giver, who's a Baal chesed, is less of a materialistic person. Materialistic people want to take. They want to hold on to what they have. They don't want to give it up to other people. Somebody who can give to others, who can care about others, is a more spiritual person. So Avraham Avinu was the Amud HaChesed, and that was the antithesis, leaving Arzecha, your materialistic focus, the Eschel Goy Gadol, make you a great nation. What's the greatness of the Jewish people, the Torah says? That we can communicate with God through the Torah and through Tefillah. That's a spiritual life. We daven. We see the spiritual necessities of life. We have a Torah which gives us a spiritual bent on life. And it's chesed. That represents chesed, the idea of being a giver, not a taker, being less materialistic. So that is, if Avram is able to leave Arzecha, then the Eschol Goy Gadol. And that is Avram. Then Va'avarechecha. If we are able to leave Moladetecha, this concept of intermediaries, I'll bless you directly. I won't have to bless you through other things. Va'avorechecha, I'll bless you. All of your good and plenty will come directly from me. It won't come through intermediaries. That corresponds to Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak was the pillar of Avoda. The difference between Avoda and Avoda Zara. Avoda Zara is serving intermediaries. Avoda is serving God directly. Yitzchak Avinu is the idea of a direct service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's like a sacrifice to God. That represents the antithesis of leaving Moladeticha, the place that's full of Avodah Zarah in Chutz La'aretz, with all of the intermediaries. Eretz Yisrael is the place of Avodah, where you can serve God directly, not through intermediaries. V'agad lo shemech, I'll make your name great, meaning the world will be influenced by you from Eretz Yisrael, not you influenced by them by living amongst them. The opposite, the antithesis. You'll have the name that's great. V'agad lo shemech, and what name is great? That refers to Yaakov Avinu. The emes of Yaakov, the Torah, will influence the world. Yaakov Avinu's name was changed from Yaakov to Yisrael. What's Yisrael? Tisorisa im Elokim v'menashim v'tuchal. You struggled with mankind, with the angels, and you persevered. Instead of them influencing you, you'll influence them. Our Torah will influence an entire world. Our emes will influence an entire world. Instead of us being influenced by them in Chutz La'aretz, they will be influenced by us like a lighthouse that emanates from Eretz Yisrael. So that is the Heye Bracha. So the Darshah says all these other things are Elohim. They're spiritual powers that we'll gain by renouncing the influences of Chutz La'aretz. But the Heye is the Osios of Yudkei Vavkei. That relationship with God was started by Avraham Avinu. And therefore we say the bracha Elokei Avraham, right? That refers to the Escha the Goy Gadol. Elokei Yitzchak v'Avarechecha. Elokei Yaakov v'Agad L'Shemecha. But we don't end the bracha Elokei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Baruch Ato Hashem Mogein Avraham. Right? Why? Because really everything was contained in Avraham. Once Avraham made the decision to leave the materialism of Chutz La'aretz and seek a spiritual life in Eretz Yisrael, everything else followed suit. Then you don't have to go through intermediaries, and then you don't have to be influenced by the Goyim. Everything will follow suit once you made that decision. So we end B'chochosmin. The Chasima, the seal, is Avraham Avinu. And I was thinking of something very interesting. The truth is that it took 3 generations for Avraham Avinu to really leave Eretz Chutz La'aretz completely. Didn't happen in 1 generation. Avraham Avinu left Arzacha. He left his land, and he got a new land, Eretz Yisrael. But he didn't actually leave his birthplace. His birthplace was still in Chutz La'aretz. He couldn't change it. He couldn't have a new birthplace. His birthplace was still in Chutz La'aretz. And Beis Abba Terach was still in Chutz La'aretz. His father's home was still in Chutz La'aretz. So for all practical purposes, Avraham Avinu only accomplished 1 of the 3. He left his land. It wasn't his land anymore, he had new land. But his birthplace and his father's home were still in Chutz La'aretz. Yitzchak Avinu already accomplished 2 of them. He was born in Eretz Yisrael. So his birthplace was Eretz Yisrael, not Chutz La'aretz. And his land was Eretz Yisrael. But his father's home, his grandfather, lived in Chutz La'aretz. So he was still connected to his father's home 3 generations. Grandfather, beyond grandfather, there's no connection. But grandfather already still is connection. Only Yaakov Avinu had all 3. He was born in Eretz Yisrael, and and that was his land, and he had no grandparents. His grandparents were in Eretz Yisrael, Avraham Avinu. Anything in Chutz La'aretz was already beyond grandparents. That's not Beis Abba. The whole fruition, the fulfillment, really only came in the 3rd generation. You know, people make Yaliyah, and they're still, you know, greener. They're still, you know, from Chutz La'aretz people. Their children are born here. They're more Israeli. Their grandchildren, for sure. But who is to be given the credit? Or the blame, if you look at it another way. Who's given the credit? The people who made the first decision to leave Chutz La'aretz and to search for a more spiritual life. To leave the materialism of Chutz La'aretz. Not that you can't live a materialistic life in Eretz Yisrael. You can. You can fight against the environmental influence here. And there's plenty of people who do it. But if you want what Eretz Yisrael has to offer, it's an aid. And therefore, people who pick themselves off usually could have done very much better materialistically in Chutz La'aretz than they do here, but they're looking for something, they're looking for a Jewish land, they're looking for a place that they could be more spiritual and keep the Torah better, whatever. That's usually what motivates, at least from people who come here. And even not from people, they're looking, they want to be more identified with Judaism and Jews. It's also something. So therefore, what's it called? Nobody comes here because they want to pay, 90% taxes or whatever. That's not the reason, motivation to want to come to Eretz Israel, right? There's got to be something different, right? Why you come here? So once you realize that those were the reasons, then there's pretty much the next generation is even stronger, and the generation after that is even stronger. So that's the idea of Lech Lecha. That's the test. And those are the parameters of the thing. Yes.
Right.
Who leave Israel? So again,
children that are born here that leave.
You can't give a general reason why. Each situation is different. Sometimes it's legitimate to leave. A person just can't make it here, parnasa wise or whatever. He leaves for practical reasons.
But many people leave for materialistic reasons.
Okay, so that's the problem with them.
More materialistic life.
Then that's a problem with them. Then they're doing the opposite of Lech Lecha. So that's a spiritual problem. Maybe they didn't have the right education, or they didn't accept the right education. But each case is a different case. There's the reasons why a person could leave, is allowed to leave, should leave, and there's reasons definitely not to leave. Depends on the person, depends on the situation. Just to tell you we don't have that much time, an interesting sidelight about leaving Eretz Israel or whatever. I remember that when the watershed for me, that I decided I'm not leaving here. I came here pretty much on a trial basis. I didn't sell my house in Miami. My shul was very good to me, and they said that they thought I'd be back in 6 months. So they said, we're not hiring anybody permanent for the next 6 months. If you tell us you're coming back, you have your job. And if you tell us in 6 months you're not coming back, then we'll start the search for a new rabbi. Very, very good to me. But I took all my furniture, all my svarim. I have 20,000 svarim. So I didn't want it to be easy to go home, to go back. Right? If I'm going to go back, it's going to be difficult. And it's going to have to really be. Okay, in any case, so you all know what it means to make aliyah and all the difficulties in the beginning, and whatever could happen, difficulties happen. Finally, I remember, what was the turning point? I must have been here around 7-8 months. I'd given a shiur somewhere in Tel Aviv, and I had a van, and I had to get back to the moshav. In those days, there were no buses that went to the moshav in the daytime, let alone at night. And a cab drive to the moshav would have cost a few hundred shekel. It's in the middle of nowhere. At least then it was. And for some reason it doesn't stop. Okay. So I went to a gas station because I didn't have enough gas to get home. And I pulled into the gas station, and nobody's there. So I figured maybe it's self-service. So I got out, and I took off the thing, and I see a guy running at me with his hands waving. Put that back. I said, what's going on? He said, don't you listen to the radio? We're on strike. All the gas stations are on strike. I said, no, I really didn't hear about it. I said, you're on strike? Okay, but I got to get home. He said, okay, take a bus. I said, where I live, there are no buses, especially this time of day. So we'll take a cab. I said, take a cab, that's half my year's salary. I said, do me a favor. I said, sell me enough gas that I can get home, and I'll pay you double for the gas. Right? You'll make a profit on it. Just sell me exactly what I need to get home. That's all. A few liters of gas. He said, I can't do that. I said, why not? He said, maybe you're a spy for the Histadrut. And if I do that, they'll take away my license. I said, do I look like a spy for the Histadrut? He said, you can never tell. He said, I said, so what do you propose I do? Right? He says, I'll tell you what. At 6 o'clock in the morning, I can sell you gas. I said, how do you know the strike's going to be over at 6 o'clock in the morning? He says, that's the way we strike. We're striking till 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, I can sell you gas. I said, this doesn't make too much sense.
What time was it?
Well, this was at 11 o'clock at night. So I said, well, what am I supposed to do? He said, you could sleep here, and at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'll sell you the gas, you go home. I went to the nearest payphone, called my wife, and tried to convince her that I was sleeping in a gas station overnight because I didn't have gas, which she was very skeptical of. And so I told her, I'll see you about 7 o'clock in the morning because I'm sleeping in a gas station. And I called back to the gas station. I said, well, where am I supposed to sleep? He said, in your car. He said, you can park over there, sleep in your car. So I nuzzled down to, it must have been 11 o'clock, and I said to myself, this is it. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. I never had to sleep in a gas station in America. I am never going to sleep in a gas station again. Tomorrow I take my family, and we are going to the American Embassy for asylum, and then we're going home. This is it. I can't stay here. It was ridiculous. So, and then I must have fallen asleep. About 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, and I was a little bit more calm, and I said to myself the following. I said, when you decided to leave Miami and come to Eretz Israel, was the reason because you'd never have to sleep in a gas station? That was the reason you moved to Eretz Israel, because you never, and now you have to sleep in a gas station, so there's no reason to stay. Obviously not. Obviously, there must have been reasons why you decided that it's kedai to go to Eretz Israel for your children's sake, for your sake, for your wife's sake, whatever it may be, right? Now, one night in a gas station erases all of that? Obviously not. At that point, I made up my mind that there's nothing that's going to send me back to Chutz Lawrence. If I can survive this night in this gas station, right, then that's it. Then obviously, there are more reasons to stay here than not sleeping in a gas station once. I mean, that wasn't the motivation of coming to Eretz Yisrael. I'd never have to sleep in a gas station. So the fact that I have to sleep in a gas station is not going to send me back. And that night was the watershed of my... At that point, I think there was nothing else that could have happened that's going to send me back, and Baruch Hashem, we're here for 27 years, so it must have worked. But that's the idea. Sometimes you have to come to grips with why you're here and what the benefits of being here are. And yes, there are definitely negative things. Okay? It goes without saying. A lot of negative things. But Lamaisa... Right, if you understand and appreciate Eretz Yisrael properly, the benefits always outweigh the negatives, because the benefits are very eternal kinds of things. So that is the test of Lech Lecha, and that's the way to deal with it. And the Mirtz Hashem, like I said, most of us came here first generation, then there's a second generation, then a third generation. By the time you get to the third generation, usually that's where you leave Arzicha, Moladitecha, and Beisavicha, and you're pretty much settled here, unless, again, there are exceptions and individual needs, desires, people who function properly, improperly, that's an individual kind of thing. Okay.